First of all, I want to thank the Chicago chapter of Sabre, the Sabre board, and certainly the Scott Bush and the Sabre staff. This has been an amazing conference already, and they have been largely responsible for getting this panel up here and to get us going. I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. When you're with Maybelle, it's like there's this. It's like the Beatles, right? You never know who's gonna want an autograph. In any case, I want to thank you guys. This has been wonderful, and thank you for having this panel. My name is Kat Williams. I'm the CEO of the International Women's Baseball Center and one of its founders. Thank you. We'll take those applause. We'll take that. And I'm going to speak first. I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of the All-Americans, but maybe in a little different way than you're used to hearing. And then we've got two other panelists, and I will introduce them. We'll end with Maybelle, because once she starts speaking, Christy and I will just simply drift away into the background. So. First of all, many of you, I'm sure, know the basic history of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. You've probably seen the movie that debuted 31 years ago on the 3rd of July. Yeah, some of you may have even seen the new Amazon series by the same name, A League of Their Own. And I'm sure some of you have probably read a book or two. If you haven't, I have a couple that I'd like to, no, I'm kidding. But most of us know, if we know anything about women's baseball, that's probably what we know, right? I mean, unless that is your world, like it is our world, you probably don't know a whole lot more than the boys went to war and Philip Wrigley called on the girls and they played baseball. It was their patriotic duty. They played professional baseball, and that was fabulous. And I am not making light of this, by the way. I'm simply trying to go fast because we only have an hour. But if you know any women's baseball history, likely that's it. Women's participation in the game of baseball, all aspects of the game of baseball, did not start in 1943, and it did not stop in 1954. Women have been part of this game since its inception, and we still are. That does not take away from the importance of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League at all. If you drew a long timeline that showed the history of girls and women in the game of baseball, it would start with the beginning of baseball. But that tick on that timeline from 1943 to 1954, when the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League played baseball professionally, hence the name, that's huge. That's a huge chunk of that history. But I think what they did off the field, what they did when they stopped playing, what they did with the money they earned, in some cases twice what their fathers made. By the way, here's a hint. They put themselves through college, they opened businesses, they became doctors and lawyers and directors of departments at large corporations. They had an opportunity to do those things because they had an opportunity to play baseball. And I think to a person, they would probably say to you, oh my God, that was some of the best time of my life. I got to play the game. I got to be part of the game, and I got paid for it. I have just a tiny little bit of that feeling now that I get to do what I do full time. You get paid for this? And that's exactly what a lot of those women felt. But they used that money. They sent their siblings through college. But it wasn't just the money they made. What did they do when they stopped playing baseball? Well, for many of them, they became teachers. They became coaches. They became outspoken advocates for girls and women to play the game, to umpire the game, to tend the fields and coach. They became outspoken advocates. It is their legacy that is far more important in some ways than their batting average. Thank you. My approach to the history of this league certainly has never been to overlook the significance of what they did on the field, because what they did on the field was pretty darn cool. But it's been about the so what. It's been about now what. So the league ended in 1954 and women just stopped being part of the game? No. Very first reunion I went to, and the Players Association used to have a reunion, well, they still do, have a reunion every year. The first one I went to was in 2003. And they had, I don't even know how many players were there. There were a number of them. And they had it in a big room like this. They were seated at tables and lines of people coming in with everything you can imagine to get autographed. And they autographed everything. And I went up to one of the women whose nickname was Rebel. She was from Arkansas. I said, how can you sit there that long? And she looked at me over her glasses and she said, you ever heard of Title IX? And I said, yeah. They believe, and I believe, they are the bridge to Title IX. So yeah, what they did on the field is important. Of course it was important. Who they are now, who they were in the 1960s and 70s and 80s and 90s and beyond, that's also important. That's also women's baseball history. And it is the reason that in 2 weeks, probably 600 or more girls are going to be in Elizabethtown, Kentucky at the Girls National Baseball Tournament. 600 girls play in the game. And they're able to play that game because people played the game before them. And they're able to play that game because not only did those women play the game, they also realized, wow, I had an opportunity. I want to make sure those girls have an opportunity. And I want to end with this image. The International Women's Baseball Center hosted the Baseball for All Nationals in Rockford, Illinois, a few years ago at Beyer Stadium, the home of, yes, the Rockford Peaches. And I'm not sure how many girls were there. I'm going to say somewhere between 250, 300 girls. They were all in for opening ceremonies. They were all in the outfield by age. They were all in their uniforms. Each team had a banner. And with opening ceremonies, Maybelle Blair and Shirley Berkovich were standing at home plate. Shirley had been a peach. Maybelle had not been a peach. She's a peach now, but she wasn't. They were standing at home plate. And the first set of girls to come walking in along the third baseline were 10-year-olds. And I was standing there behind home plate watching as teams of 10-year-old girls in their baseball uniforms walked up the third baseline into the arms of Maybelle Blair and Shirley Berkovich, and those girls were in tears. Those girls were not even thought of when that movie came out, but they thanked them. They recited lines from that movie. Every single one of those girls walked onto Beyer Field and into the arms of Maybelle Blair and Shirley Berkovich, and they had an opportunity to thank the women who provided them with the opportunity they had on that day, and that just doesn't happen. So to me, we can talk about their batting averages. We can talk about Sophie Curry's. We can talk about Dottie Cam and Shaq. We can talk about all those fantastic ball players, and we do. But let's not forget the legacy. Let's not forget the impact that they had, not only on girls and women in the game, but boys and men in the game. There were a lot of ways that league had an impact on communities. One of them, of course, was economic. Huge fan base, for example, in Rockford. And we're very fortunate today to have Christy Erickson, who is with the South Bend Historical Society. You've been there 15 years, and she is going to speak to us about the impact of those leagues on the cities in which they played. So we're going to turn this over to Christy, and then we'll talk to Maybelle. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat, and hello, my friends. You'll forgive me and my millennial nature. I've got my notes on my phone, unfortunately. But as you just learned, I'm Christy Erickson. I'm with the History Museum, yes, that's our name, in South Bend, Indiana. And we are the second largest and second oldest historical society in the state of Indiana. And also the national repository for the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League's Players Association. So have had a long time permanent exhibit, and we are an excellent resource for you and anyone else who would like to come and learn about the league at our museum. But we're not in South Bend, are we? We are here. And we are here to talk about the impact of the league on communities and on people through the years. So there's a number of ways this can be measured, and a number of ways this can't be measured. So I've kind of divided this up into a few different categories. One of those would be your economic impact. As Kat just mentioned, you know, the league drew crowds of 2,000, 5,000, 7,000 people at many of their games throughout the Midwest. And that's a lot of folks paying for tickets and paying for peanuts and snacks and programs and things like that. Though sometimes a professional sports organization's economic impact can be marginal in the community that it's in. And there's a million studies about that, especially in the modern era. A lot of those apply more to MLB or professional basketball than a smaller league like the AAGPBL in the 1940s. However, despite all of these crowds, it was unfortunate that often many of the teams in the league lost money fairly consistently. When the league began, it was backed by Philip Wrigley, who had more money than he knew what to do with. So he came up with something to do with it. But he encouraged local businesses to also help front the remainder of the cost. He fronted half the money, and then the local businesses fronted the other half as their patriotic duty, you know, to provide entertainment and morale to the folks. And even after he sold it to Arthur Mayerhoff, they struggled financially. Most teams operated at a loss, and sometimes a significant loss. It was inexpensive entertainment, and most of their revenue came from ticket sales, which is not the case for most professional sports today. And the South Bend Blue Sox did a bit better than most in my hometown, but they also had a unique location. So they originally played at Bendix Field, which, if you're familiar with the Bendix Corporation, Vincent Bendix built all kinds of things in South Bend, but one of those was a field for the local industrial teams to play each other, which was a big deal in the area. Studebaker and Oliver and Singer and Bendix and, you know, the C.E. Lee Paint Company, O'Brien Varnish, all had teams, and they all competed fiercely for the championship in the area. And the Blue Sox played there, but eventually outgrew that field, and it also burned down. So they moved to Playland Park, where there was another baseball stadium where our minor league team used to play. But their advantage there is that Playland Park is also an amusement park. So you've not only got a baseball stadium, but also a roller coaster and a racetrack for both horses and cars, and a ballroom and lots of other things to kind of help attract people to the games to support that business. And in fact, the Blue Sox saw the highest profit of the league was $7,000 in 1946 versus a $25,000 loss in 1944. But as we learned from the opening remarks before this, much of that is invested back into the players. And players for the league tended to earn significantly more than they might have opportunities to earn elsewhere. Certainly not as much as a men's league, but, you know, times haven't changed all that much. And as they earned money and earned a profit for their team, it helped to attract talent, much like today. Sure. What you also saw at the time were sponsorships and promotions, so those local companies putting more money into their own community, into promoting things that might help attract businesses and people to come move to the area. So that's kind of where we're going here is, as you learn from most of these types of discussions, that the impact of the AAGPBL is much larger than just economic. It is on society and on individuals, and especially on women in sports. The South Bend Tribune, our local newspaper, in 1943 ran an article about a woman named Ramona White who traveled from Georgia with her family to see the team play for 2 weeks straight. She attended every game for 2 weeks and met all of the players, and after which her greatest wish in her whole life was to play for the Blue Sox. And for the record, she did not play for the Blue Sox, but did play basketball for the Navy. She joined the Navy, she worked on an oil rig, she was a successful golfer, and so that's kind of a very singular example of seeing these inspiring women inspired her to achieve great things in life. And cities with teams also tended to start their own camps and leagues for young women. Fort Wayne, where the Fort Wayne Daisies were headquartered, had and still has a long-term league for young women to play, like Little League, since the 40s. And South Bend, Indiana, in 1947, managed to field 12 teams of young women to play in the hometown, kind of emulating the larger events that were happening. Outside of women in sports at the time, one thing that you also saw was that in teams that hosted a professional women's baseball team, like South Bend, like Rockford, like Kenosha, they also eventually would come to employ more women at jobs in factories or in other spheres. So women were working more in the 40s and the 50s anyway, but in teams with AAG, or in cities with AAGPBL teams, more women were working than in cities without. And that's absent of other contributing factors like minor league teams or demographics or things like that. And the theory there is role models. You know, if you're if you lived at the time and your mother worked and you were a young woman, you would probably work too. If you were a young man and your mother worked, you'd be much more likely to marry a woman who worked. And if you were a fan of women's sports and professional women's sports and watching all these women play at the highest level, you would be inspired to say, maybe I can do something a little bit outside of traditional gender norms, or maybe I can do something a little bit different than what some of my peers do as well. And so you see a little bit of a bump in those areas of more women working. And so that's another way that those players would inspire people in their region. Now, directly after and up to today, Kat also talked about players in their professions. At the time, most women did not go to college. Maybe 8% of women attended college and held professional careers. But ex-players in the league, it was more like 35%. And in many interviews, when people asked about how ex-players' life stories unfolded, many of them would say, you know, well, I always thought that I would be on a farm in Iowa, but after playing in the league and traveling all around the Midwest and meeting all kinds of people and doing something special, I saw that maybe I could do something more than that myself. And so you see so many of these players going to college, earning master's degrees and doctorate degrees and becoming, as we just said, things like doctors and lawyers and owning their own businesses and being at high-level jobs in traditionally masculine fields, and teachers. One of the players that I've known for a long time is Betsy Jockham, who is now 102 years old, still happy to come out to events when she can. She can't always, but was a teacher for many years. And I'm always running into people in town who are saying, "Oh, I had a teacher who used to play baseball. Yeah, that's Betsy." And still, you know, sharing that knowledge and that strength with the community and inspiring them to further heights, I guess. And then you move on to closer to today. We've got the Players Association, which was formed in the 80s and promoted things like events at reunions, which we mentioned, where lots more people could be exposed to the history of the league. The Run Jane Run event at Fort Wayne, which kind of prompted an organization of players and other associates to promote the league's history to the Baseball Hall of Fame when they opened their exhibit in 1988, and then the League of Their Own movie in 1992, and so on from there. In my opinion, as a person who's worked in a museum for a long time, when you see something, when you see a movie, when you see you know, Gina Davis and Tom Hanks getting in a big fight, and you say, well, I want to learn more about that. And then you go get a book, or you go read online, or you go watch a documentary, or go watch the many, many interviews that are online with ex-players and learn more about the topic. And you go tell your friends because you've learned this great new thing. And that's really a wonderful way to kind of spread the word and to help teach people. And people are still so inspired. We have young folks coming to our museum constantly to see our exhibit and to see what we have to share, and we change it periodically, so there's always something new. And that's one of the things that people really remember is, the women's baseball exhibit that you have is something I really enjoy. And on that note, at least in Indiana, you have your school curriculum that is something all children have to learn in school. And so we're working on a petition to the state schools oversight committee to include the AGPBL in our school curriculum, because we feel like it's an important part of Indiana history, and to make sure that all children who go through school have to learn about the league along with every other part of the state history. So we think that's a really important part of people being educated about women's history and about baseball history as well. And then, of course, cities that once had teams, or cities in regions that are nearby, are now putting forth a lot of effort to celebrate the league in their history. Rockford, as we mentioned, you know, having those reunions and exhibition games, and South Bend, we recently dedicated a marker, a state historic marker at Playland Park, where the team played, so people who are there can learn all about that history as well. So even many years later, people are still learning about this and being inspired by this and thinking that maybe they themselves can also do something a little bit different, do something a little bit more challenging, and do something that is what they really want to do instead of maybe what they always thought they should do. So that's all I have for you today, and I will turn it over now to the person you really paid to see, which is my friend Maybelle Blair.
Yeah, not yet. You still have me for a second. So what we're going to, is this on? Yeah, okay. So the way we're going to do this, I'm going to start off asking a few introductory questions of Maybelle, and then we'll see where it goes. We're hoping to have a little bit of time for you guys to ask questions. So Maybelle. Talk to us a little bit about your early interest in baseball. How did that happen? Where did that come from?
Well, I'll tell you, I was conceived in Texas and born in California. So I just want you to know that so you don't have to ask me that question. And it came from a mother and a father, by the way. And I was very proud of that. And I didn't have any choice but to love baseball. Down in Texas, there wasn't too much to do for my family but ride horses and ride broncs and what have you. So they played a lot of baseball down there. So naturally, the old farmers, they had large families down there. So my dad's family had 7 boys and about 3 girls, so they all played baseball. What else was there to do? So they went out there, they played, and then they formed a baseball Blair team that traveled all over Texas playing baseball. So I can't even remember when I ever picked up my first ball. Then we moved to California, where I was born, and down in Redondo Beach, in case if you don't know where that is, down here in Southern California. And I grew up that way. And then my older brother was nothing but naturally a baseball fan. And they decided to build a baseball stadium. So out in the fields, that's all we had, fields anyway, and down there. There wasn't any buildings like it is today. So they started dragging the field out there. And they had an old gate or a box spring mattress, and I was supposed to sit on that sucker, and I did. And I, a little thing, about maybe 5 or 6 years old, and he'd get mad if I bounced up in the air when he hit a bump, you know, so he could make that field smoother. But that's the way I grew up. I didn't know anything else, and I loved it from the day I was born and to the day that I quit playing. And my heart and my life will always be with baseball.
Yeah, and by the way, her brother was quite the baseball player too. He ended up being injured in the war, but was also a very good baseball player, as I understand it.
Oh yeah, he was a very, very good baseball player. And in fact, he made the All-American team with the national team. But then he went off to war and got injured, so that ended his baseball career, but not for the love of the game. I have 2 little nephews now. One can't play a lick, which really is upsetting. And I'm very, very lucky that if the next little nephew, if he even makes a junior varsity in high school, if he does that, I will just be thrilled to death. But I have a 9-year-old great-great-great niece that I think will be my ball player, because she's quite strong and She seems to like to hold a little ball in her hand. It's very little, but I push that ball in that hand. And if she doesn't, as long as I'm on this side of the dirt, she's going to be able to throw that ball.
Of course, you had to wait for the niece to be the ball player. That makes perfect sense. Well, you know, this being Chicago, a lot of these folks will appreciate your story about when you were younger and how your brother taught you to keep score and listen to the Cubs game on the radio.
Yeah, a lot of you from Chicago, that's all I knew was the Cubbies. In my day, I had sit by the radio. We didn't have any television or anything, and the radio was hardly working. But boy, we could get scratchy from Chicago. It was the only baseball station we had. So I was in love with the Cubs, Gabby Hartnett and all, and Billy Herman and all those boys. I don't know if any of you ever remember them, but they were quite some ball players, and I loved it. And I had to learn to keep score because my brother had to practice, and my mother was canning, and she also had to know what the score was. So they taught me how to take score and keep track of what was going on by the innings. And after inning, I had to go out and run and tell my brother and the boys what the score was, and then my mother would come running in from the kitchen and ask me what the score was. So I grew up loving the Chicago Cubs because we were the AAA team here in California, the mm-hmm. Los Angeles Angels.
Right, right. Yes, you know, 6 degrees of separation. You know, a lot of girls and women have probably similar stories in that their families loved the game and we learned to play because of our families and played with the boys. But not all of us created our first team when we were in the fifth grade. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, well, yeah. About I got in the fifth grade, I was very bored because I wanted to play baseball and what have you. So I went up to my teacher and asked her if I could get some bats and some balls, and she looked at me like I'd lost my mind. But anyway, she did. She got them for me, and I had those girls lined up, and boy, I got them good. I taught them how to play pepper. We played and played and played. I formed the team, and I asked her, I said, is there any possible that we could get a team going to play the school down the road? She says, well, Maybell, we don't do that. I says, well, can't you try? And she says, well, okay. So she called her old buddy down there. She knew the teacher down there and asked if that could be possible. She says, sure, that would be sort of fun. So anyway, we did, and she piled her car full of kids, and a couple of them rode the bicycles about 2 or 3 miles, and we went down there and played our first baseball game in the fifth grade.
Yeah, and Maybell has been saying, well, at least try, for the last 90 years, trust me. In fact, most of my phone calls with her end with, well, at least try, Kat. But you didn't stop there, right? I mean, you've been creating baseball opportunities both for yourself and for other girls and women all along. Talk a little bit about after the fifth grade. Most of our careers don't start that early, but after the fifth grade, talk a little bit about the teams you played on. And you didn't jump straight to the All-Americans. So talk a little bit about that time period.
Oh, I had several ball teams because I always liked to be the manager because I thought I knew more about baseball than anybody else in the world. And to this day, I'd love to be the manager. I'd like to go manage the Chicago Cubs or the Los Angeles Angels if they'd invite me. I could do it. And
No doubt. I
do know quite a bit about baseball because that's all I've ever really loved and really enjoyed so much in my life and still do. That's why I'm still marching around at 96 years old trying to spread the word about baseball. Yeah, I had several teams, and I played for the New Orleans Jacks, world champions, and what have you, and several of the great softball teams. In fact, I played professional softball here in Chicago, in the Chicago League, if any of you ever knew they had one, but I did, and of the two, I prefer baseball because that's what I grew up with. And that's what I want to do, is give the girls a chance to be able to have a league of their own again like we had. I've been preaching that ever since I could move, is we got to have another league of our own. And several of the girls, we wanted to move forward, so we built IWBC and thought, gosh, what a great opportunity it would be to have a home for the girls baseball like the boys do for Williamsport in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So why shouldn't we have a home of our own for our little girls? They love baseball. All you girls out there, you must love baseball. You wouldn't be here. But I see quite a few women out there. So if you look in the stands, you'll see almost as many women out there as you do men. Give us an opportunity to show how much we love the game. We will never be Major League Baseball players. We don't intend to be Major League Baseball. All we would love to do is have a league of our own like the NWBC and the women's soccer. But we could do this. I think we're probably a couple years away, but we need to build a home of our own. Like in Rockford. Where else would it be but in Rockford, where the Rockford Peaches played? I hated the Rockford Peaches. To this day, I don't like the Rockford Peaches.
Tell them why, Blair.
Well, because they had some pretty good ball players.
Uh-huh. That's because she couldn't beat them, that's why.
But we sure did our damnedest. Anyway, this is the reasons why I'm out here trying to build this thing with IWBC up to build our own home. And I would love to see the USA team come and make that their home. But I'm working on it. But we'll see if that'll happen. Maybe not, maybe so. But did you people realize that we're not the best women's baseball team? Do you know Japan can beat our rear ends off right today?
Yep.
And that really hurts my feelings. Not only my feelings, my whole body, it hurts. And also Canada and Taiwan, Australia, they can beat us. Can you believe that? American women cannot do this, but we are getting stronger. We're going to have, I think in 24, the World Cup will be coming. We came in I think it was 1918, that's when I was born.
Not quite.
2018 or 17,
yep,
it was.
18, I
down
think.
In Florida. And do you know what? We came in third. The Americans came in third. Japan came in first. Taiwan came in second. Mm-hmm. We came in third and barely beat Canada. And Canada came in fourth. Now, we should be on the top of that ladder. I mean, if you're going to go play something, you're going to be the best, right? If you don't, stay home. That's my thinking. If you can't do anything, don't give half-assed try. Give it your best. And that's what I've been trying to do all my life, is give my best to my baseball and to give our girls an opportunity to play the game that they love.
Wow. I think that's known as a mic drop. So, but I got another question. And then we will give some time for you guys to talk to Maybelle. We could literally be here all day talking about the number of ways in which just Maybelle, and she is not the only one, but just Maybelle has spent 90 years making opportunities for girls and women in the game. And how she's been doing it recently, of course, has changed with the times. And you all seen the movie A League of Their Own. And honestly, if you haven't, please do not tell me. But you've all seen the movie A League of Their Own. And hopefully most of you have seen the Amazon series by the same name. And Maybelle was a big part of both of those productions. So it's not just, you know, grabbing girls and creating a field. Sometimes it's about participating in media productions. Blair, tell everyone a little bit about how you got involved with the Amazon TV series.
Oh, well, I was home rocking, you know. If I'm not on the road, I'm in my rocking chair, very bored, just going back and forth for 8 hours a day. So what else is there to do, you know, for me? I don't crochet or knit or sew, so all I do is rock. I wore out about 5 rocking chairs already. But anyway, I was very fortunate. I was called by Will Graham, the producer, and he said, would you mind if Abby Jacobson and Liz Cole and I come down and talk to you? And I says, well, sure, I'm home doing nothing but back and forth. And I said, come on down. So we did. We went down and talked, and they asked me if I would be a consultant on the movie, and naturally, I said yes, naturally. And Shirley Berkovich, who was my buddy that travels with me, or did travel with me all over, she died last year and left me with this responsibility of trying to build this home in Rockford, Illinois. Surely I could kill you. But anyway, that's the way it started. And we have 4 more series right now. It's on hold. As soon as the strike's over, we will start filming again on the 4 last series of League of Their Own. Yep. And I'm getting all excited about it and nervous at the seams because I can't hardly wait, and I hope they hurry up before I'm on the other side of the dirt. That's what my problem is now, is I just don't have much more time left that I can do these things. Oh, and I wanted to tell you people before I forget, there was 650 of us ball players all during the years while we were playing, and there was about 41 of us still living. About 25 of us don't know who in the hell we are. And there's about 15 that knows, that are about like I am, about 15 left that are able to get out and around, and some of them are just plain old sick and old. I think our oldest now is 101, soon be 102, and I think I'm about one of the last ones too, and I'm 96.
Don't let her fool you, though, that 96. She may be sitting at home rocking, but the brain is going. And don't think for 1 second she's not also picking up the phone, calling Kat, calling Donna Cohen, calling... No, I hope if you guys haven't seen it that you take the time to watch the Amazon series. It is very different than the movie, but also historically accurate, and I think that's important to know.
Well, before you say, I got something else to say.
Welcome to my world.
I want you to know that these girls or women are more stronger than the men when it comes to belly aching about all their pains and their aches and their moans and their groans. When we were playing baseball, we didn't have sliding pads, guys. We didn't have sliding pads. We had little dresses on and bloomers under there, you know. We go sliding in. And we'd get all this gravel in our rear end, and today, if you feel my rear end, you can still feel gravel in there because I still carried it with me. I have a souvenir. And we'd break our fingernail, we wouldn't go on the DI list for 10 weeks. We'd have to play, or somebody else would play for us, and you'd be sent home. But anyway, I just wanted you guys to know that. I want to rub it into you a little bit. I just know that, Tommy has broken a fingernail or is getting a little blister or something.
Hey, you know
and
what?
He's the greatest ball player that ever lives. Isn't he wonderful? God almighty, what a boy he is.
I'm sure there will be one more thing, but why don't we go ahead and open up to some questions for Maybelle, for either of us, although we're well aware that we are not the stars of the show.
I just wonder how many questions I could have in 5 minutes.
We got 10. Go ahead.
Could you please comment on the success and failure of the Silver Bullets?
I'm sorry, I really couldn't understand you.
The Silver Bullets team, the women's team.
Yes. The Silver Bullets are actually an example of this legacy, right? The Silver Bullets and so many other teams, Baseball for All is a part of that legacy. But the Silver Bullets, of course, you know, what an amazing opportunity that was, too. But they are very much a part of the legacy of these women. Go ahead. Except that you're a Brewers fan. Now, I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan. Give us this year, okay?
Nah. What do you think of the fact that in high schools and colleges they play softball instead of baseball? Do you think it just seems like that might just be a barrier for women's baseball, and that, you know, something comparable to the WNBA might develop if they had already been playing baseball in high school and college?
Yeah. Are you asking me or Maybelle?
I'm asking anybody who wants to chime in.
He's asking about women being pushed into softball.
That's upsetting.
Well, I would just say quickly to that, I love softball. It's a fantastic sport. I played competitive fast-pitch softball, but it is not a women's game. It was not created for women. In fact, it was created by men here in Chicago so that they could play inside during the winter. And so this push for women to play softball is also about exclusionary practices. So that's a different panel. Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I was going to ask almost the same question. My granddaughter is getting pushed into softball, and you see that at the college level and
yeah, and you know, some of it is Title IX. There is no bigger proponent of Title IX than I am. But unfortunately, this has really entrenched itself, this push to softball, as a result of Title IX, because schools started using it as a, quote,
right,
equivalency
right
sport, and it isn't.
Right.
It's a great sport, but it is not baseball. And women, even in a conference like this where it's full of 500 baseball fans, I start talking about some game or something, and invariably someone will say, oh, well, you know, I like softball too. So, yeah, it's entrenched. But she should not be pushed into anything. And, in fact, contact Justine Siegel in Baseball for All. She won't be pushed into softball.
All right. Well, if Mabel has any ideas on how we can really fight that, not just for my granddaughter, but for all of them.
How we can fight this, keep from pushing girls into softball?
No, not really, until people realizes that girls really do want to play baseball. They've got in their heads that that's what the girls want to do, is play softball. Naturally, they do in the families, and if I had a daughter, I'd probably be too, because if you know, you get a scholarship to go to college, that's pretty lot of money, and I don't blame them. But give a girl a chance to be able to choose which one she wants. I love softball. I played professional softball. I played amateur and won the world championship playing softball. But I prefer myself, if I had the choice, is naturally as my love is baseball. But give the girls a chance to choose what they want to play. And just like with the little boys, they want to play football, for God's sakes, let them play football. If you want to play baseball, let them play baseball. Let them play the sport that they love. Let the kids be kids. Don't twist them one way or the other.
First of all, I'd like to thank all three of you for not just for keeping the legacy alive, but for promoting the future of girls in baseball. That's great. But I was curious if Mabel could tell us about her most memorable game.
I'm sorry, I really can't understand that. What was your most memorable game?
Putting on my uniform.
When I put on
my uniform, I tell you, I said, Mabel, You are a professional baseball player, believe that. And I put on my spikes and I hit that cement, and there's nothing like the music of cleats hitting the cement, clickety-clack, clickety-clack, clickety-clack. To this day, I don't know why they didn't make a song about clickety-clack with baseball shoes. In fact, I went into a Big Five store about a year ago. In fact, I think not even a year ago. And I said, oh my God, I just miss that so much. So I sat down, and the guy says, yo, you want some tennis shoes? And I says, no, I want some spikes. He says, you want what? I said, I want a pair of spikes. So he says, you're sure? I said, yeah, I'm sure. So anyway, he went and got them, and I put them on, and I started walking. I heard clickety-clack, clickety-clack, and he just looked at me and is over-whispering to some other guys. I know what he was talking about. She's out of her mind. And anyway, I sat down, and he says, well, I hope you like that. And he started boxing them up, and I says, no, I'm going to take those home with me. I bought those suckers. I don't know how much they cost me, but they're sitting in my closet at home, and I go in and look at them every day of my life.
Go ahead.
This is a Maybell question. As opposed to a lot of today's game, did you guys really like to do the bunt, the hit and run, the stolen base, and all the other things that we miss?
Oh, yeah, we did all the same things. You think we couldn't butt? I could butt right today. It's better than some of those professional baseball players. We can do anything men can, but we can't quite do it as good. Let's put it that way. We can butt as well, may not be as far, but we can butt. We can hit a ball, a line drive as hard as a man for our size.
One more.
We can do that. And we can run, but maybe not as fast.
One more question.
And believe me, I can still slide as good as any man.
Thank you. This has been very good. A couple of things. I know we got to watch our time. I'd like to see women get to the major leagues because if you have the skill set for it, you don't have to be 7 feet tall or weigh 300 pounds. So I think that's long overdue for women to play in the majors. Second of all, although I notwithstanding your comments about softball, maybe you could comment on the impact of Oklahoma's success in the Women's College World Series, 3 consecutive titles, 53 consecutive wins. I think that's very noteworthy. Thank you.
Oklahoma softball is fantastic. There is no doubt about it. I loved watching it. I watched all of it, but that's softball. So I'm sorry I have been, it's Scott's fault. Scott said we only could have one more question. So I know.
Boo, Scott, boo.
All right, thank you all so much. We're gonna be around. We appreciate it.
Clap louder, that clap.